All right. Well, I'm here with Caitlin, and we're going to talk about security labels, among other things. So the first thing I've got is an Ars Technica story about the U.S. government preparing security labels, which appear to be pretty similar to the ones they already have in Germany. And they're going to have a label to tell you how secure IoT devices are. It is going to be an optional opt-in program by the manufacturers, not required, but it's going to tell you something about the security of them. And they have a demonstration label that will tell you like how long security updates are available, how you log in, whether it takes password or multi-factor, and it has a QR code to scan to get more data. And it tells you other things like whether the data is stored in the cloud, whether the data is shared with and sold to other people. So it does sound pretty good to me, like useful information in a nice standardized way. And they modeled it after nutrition labels on food, which seems like a very reasonable thing to model it after. So hopefully that will happen. They say they're going to have it in spring of 2023. They're still working on developing it. But I've been waiting for this for years. I hope it helps. And then Caitlin's got a strange GPS.
Right. So MIT, the MIT Technology Review, has a article talking about using Starlink as another form of GPS. Now, the idea is that when you set up one of the Starlink dishes, the dish needs to know where to point, and it gets that data from the Starlink satellites themselves. And somebody named Humphreys figured that they could use this as another form of GPS. So you could listen for the Starlink signals, reverse engineer, you know, what they're sending out, and use that to triangulate your position on the planet. That's all well and good. And I do like having backups for GPS. But what I'm wondering, and the article really doesn't get into, is that one of the major ways that satellites get their location is from GPS itself. So are they using, you know, the Starlink satellites to get, you know, GPS data from the GPS satellites just like as a relay? I don't know. This is good because GPS can be an issue sometimes, especially when you don't get a good signal. GPS is very weak, easily blocked. So if we could get a stronger low Earth orbiting positioning system, that would be very beneficial to a lot of people.
Well, it has a special application because what I've been told is GPS has a 50-yard randomness added to stop you from using it to target cruise missiles, and Starlink would help get around that.
It would. There are other ways to get around it as well. So I wouldn't say that this is going to break all GPS forever, but you know, definitely this is, you know, eventually we're going to have very precise GPS in all our things, and that's just the way the world's going to work. The idea that the government can mandate some weird like GPS rules to make it so that we'll never get, you know, accurate location data is just silly.
Well, of course, the one use of the accurate location data is to deploy like a drone or something to drop a bomb. So I can see their concern.
I can see their concern too. They could also just use a camera on the drone to get their accurate location to drop a bomb. So, you know, there's. You know, and if you want to get even fancier, you can, for example, one of the things that cell phones do to get much more accurate location data is to use the cell phone towers themselves to triangulate the position of the cell phone. So if you strap a cell phone onto your targeting device and use the cell network, once again, you get even closer, you know, to a very precise location. So,
yeah, and the Wi-Fi too.
You can use Wi-Fi. There's so many ways to get your location. Yeah, everyone's going to get out their, what are they called, the thermopolites? No, they're the thing where you measure the
three words?
No, it's the, my brain's failing me.
I know the feeling. That was happening to me last night.
It's a thing that geologists use to, like, you know, do surveys of lands.
Oh, okay. I don't really know what they use. I guess I would assume GPS, but I don't know.
No, they use, you've seen them out on like the city blocks where they have, they're the looking to like finders and they're looking at the angles
oh,
between
yeah.
different, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sextants.
No, they're not sectants. There's a name for them. It's not thermalites. It's
I know the old ships at sea use sextants.
theodolite. Theodolite. That's
Oh,
what they're
good
called.
word. I never knew what those were. These are just really accurate ways to find your location from the sun and the moon, or what?
No, I mean they just measure sort of angles, so you can measure the angle from the horizon to like another location. Get your distance to it. And what's really interesting is that when you do this when you use theodolites to create a triangle, in order to do geological surveys, those triangles always have internal angles greater than 180 degrees.
Right, because you're on a sphere.
Because you're on a sphere, yes.
All right. So anyway, Google is launching Quark, which it's kind of light on technical details, but this is supposed to secure the supply chain, which is a big issue. And there's been some previous Google efforts to do this in response to SolarWinds and Log4Shell and all these supply chain attacks. And what they're trying to do is get people to contribute to this open source project so there will be an easy to search database, as far as I can understand this, where you can get a list of all the components that are in a product and their known vulnerabilities. It seems like a valuable thing. You know, right now, people are talking about the software bill of materials, but I was talking about this on Paul's Security Podcast, and the thing that bothered me is your software bill of materials would have to be constantly updated with every patch and update, and nobody's doing that. So this seems more productive to sort of do some binary analysis of products on and have some other party at them. Anyway, they're trying to figure out how to do it, but it would be nice if there was someplace you could go and get a list of all the components in your software and whether they're vulnerable. And I don't think that's such easy job. That's an easy job at all right now. Anyway, Google's product may help. And so you've got a Ring doorbell alert.
Yeah, here's something terrifying. The Washington Post has an article written by Justice McDaniel talking about a couple, an old person and a 15-year-old teenager. They got an alert on their Ring doorbell. So they installed the Ring doorbell, and someone came to their door, and it was a neighbor delivering a package that was accidentally delivered to the wrong address. So they got the alert. They freaked out that someone was on their property. Now, this neighbor that had dropped off the package has already left, but the old person, Gino, who was 73, and Rocky, who was 15, picked up 45 caliber handguns. It went out and just started shooting. And they shot a woman who was just sitting in a car nearby. And the woman drove away, but she was there were 7 bullets in her car. Some of them went through like an empty car seat, and one went actually lodged into the driver's seat itself. So that's one of the, and I was thinking about this particularly in the context of the recent Netflix documentary about Dahmer, which is really popular, and what that's doing to the American psyche, watching these sort of true crime documentaries where they just begin to see crime everywhere where there's no crime. People start getting scared. I mean, it's Halloween, we like getting scared, but there is this psychological effect where we have all these alerts going off, all these documentaries about, all these serial killers around us. It can put people into a very heightened state of alert, and it can be dangerous, as we've seen here.
Yeah, I mean, this is, of course, crazy. I remember an interview a few years ago when they were talking about American attitudes towards guns and crime. And then they interviewed Canadians, like in a big city like Toronto. And they said, "You lock your door?" He said, "No, I don't bother." They said, "Has anybody ever come in and stolen your stuff?" He said, "Yeah, that happened." I said, "Did you start locking your door?" He said, "No, I just don't worry about it." They just, this seems to be, this super paranoia seems to be an American obsession where somebody knocks at your door. Why do you assume there's a criminal and you have to shoot them? There's lots of innocent reasons somebody would be knocking at your door.
Right. And I think that the issue with the idea of the good guy with the gun is that any good guy with a gun is basically a temporarily embarrassed murderer. It's
Yeah, I mean, I've lived an awful long time and I've never yet needed a gun to resolve any problem in my life. I
yeah,
just don't think this is a common need to solve problems that really come up.
no, you, there are needs for guns, especially if you're a farmer.
Well, the
Okay.
police, to deal with varmints. Well, that's true. We did
Yeah,
need
yeah.
to get rid of varmints.
The police rarely need guns. I mean, once in a while, like you'll need a SWAT team come in because there's like an active shooter because someone else has a gun.
Yeah.
But, rarely do the police need guns. Rarely do guns actually like do much. I mean, for self-protection. I mean, and when people talk about the Second Amendment, they're really talking about taking up arms against the U.S. government, which once again is like, I don't have that much animosity towards the United States,
This is what my father said, and this is definitely what the current Republicans are saying, is that they need to overthrow the government by force, and that's what the guns are for.
I have no, I don't have that many qualms with the U.S. government to take it over by force yet, even with all the problems it has had, even with all the decades and centuries of oppression. I still don't think we necessarily need to run to the Capitol with guns. I still think we can do some violent riots first and stuff. So,
And I think the most effective thing is nonviolent. But anyway, we may live through a time when we're seriously unhappy with the government again, the way things are going.
yeah. Well,
But I don't.
I think taking up guns to the government should happen when riots fail. Like when you can no longer have riots, then it's.
I think, yeah, I'm hoping to avoid the violence. I think I'm not going to participate in it, but I imagine, but it is definitely going to happen and has already started happening at a low level, like the lunatics bombing abortion clinics and stuff.
I mean, I'm not always. I'm sort of like a Martin Luther King stance on violence, which is to say that, violence is a tool that you sometimes need to use to defend yourself, right? But it should be used in self-defense. And in an ideal situation, you should be able to resolve things peacefully, because you do need to care about the optics of what you're doing.
Yes, I mean, you're not going to get any allies if you're violent. They're just going to call you a terrorist and hunt you down, and no one's going to want to join your team because you're scary. You have to
Exactly.
avoid scaring the observers and make them feel like you're the moral side that they want to join.
Exactly. And there are ways to change the system without violently overthrowing it. So,
For example, for at least the next couple of years, we'll be able to actually vote.
yeah. Go figure.
Yeah. You see how well that's been working, both here and in Britain. But anyway, the Washington Post has an article. Apparently, they say it's all over, but the shouting. Musk is really going to own Twitter in 1 week. And he has said his first order of business is to fire 75% of the staff because they're all nonproductive and worthless, and then make it make a lot of more money and stuff. And he's admitted he's vastly overpaying for it. We expect enormous turmoil at Twitter, even more than he's caused before. Anyway, they had a nice article in the Washington Post about it, and I like the way it ends. He says, it's like you bought a new car, you decided you didn't want it, and then you crash it, and then you're like, I'll keep it. Because Musk has certainly disrupted Twitter greatly over the last month or two with all his protests about it and complaining and then coming in and leaving again. So he's sort of trashed it, and now he's going to own it. I would think if you want to make money, not that I'm qualified to give this advice, I would think as soon as he buys Twitter, the price will plummet because the price really should be like $15, and it went up to 45 because he's paying 45. But then I think he's going to make it private after he's in. That's what I've heard. It's not no longer going to be publicly traded. So anyway, there will be great turmoil at Twitter if he fires three quarters of the people. That will make big changes. But I must say, from a purely business point of view, I tend to agree with him that Twitter is ridiculous. It's not making any money. It doesn't have any new features. It doesn't seem to be adding anything to have business value ever. It does seem to be incredibly poorly managed as a company intended to make money. And maybe he can turn it around and turn it into a payment app or something where it actually has a cash flow. So maybe they're right to bet on early on Musk that he's like paying too much for it, but I'll fix that by making it productive.
Right.
Maybe he will.
I mean, it has a brand name, and so you could be buying the brand and just think of it like that. But the problem I see with this is that the fact that Elon's coming in and he's saying, I'm going to just come in and I'm going to fire these people. And that tells me that Elon is probably on some level some sort of sociopath, because no one who is like compassionate, who cares about what's going on, wants to come in or even state that they're going to like fire people, even if it's something they have to do. It's like, it's like.
Oh no, this is very common. This is essentially how all corporate restructuring works. You buy a company, then you fire about half of them or more, integrate them in, removing redundancy. That is just how it works. I don't think that's particularly evil of him. That is sort of inevitable.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not anyone who goes and advertises that they are going to go out and fire a bunch of people. It raises a lot of red flags for me.
Not for me. I think it's business as usual. And I think it's what he has to say to secure the funding. I think anybody that was going to invest in this would say, look, what are you going to do to make big changes? Because the way it's running now, it's totally not worth investing in. So you have to tell me I'm going to change everything or I won't invest. And right. And I think he has a very good argument that Twitter has been paying all these developers for years and they've apparently developed nothing. Twitter has no new features, no nothing. So they don't seem to be accomplishing anything. So I see some justice in his position.
Like the metaverse.
Well, that would be one direction to go. I think that's the wrong direction, but they need to do something big and bold like that. I think his plan to make it a payment, he wants to make it the everything app, where you have a Twitter app on your phone and you use it for every purpose, shopping and payment for your friends and everything else. And that is at least an idea that might go somewhere. But Twitter's just been sitting there, not changing at all, doing nothing all this time, has huge influence, but they never collect any money from anybody. And they don't introduce any features that would tempt you to pay. Like there's this Twitter Blue for $3 a month that apparently gives you nothing. And, you know, it just needs somebody to come in and find a way to monetize it.
Right.
Anyway, and so you've got a spacesuit with water in it. What's the story here?
Yeah, so about 7 months ago, a spacesuit got a little too moist inside. And so none of the NASA astronauts could go on a spacewalk until they could figure out what was going on with the spacesuits. Well, you can't send engineers up to the space station cheaply. So they decided the best thing to do would be to pack up the quote-unquote malfunctioning spacesuit, send it back to, you know, the engineers on the ground at the next, you know, departure date, have the engineers then go over it, and then figure out if the spacesuit is still spaceworthy. And what they found out was that, yes, what happened is that the astronaut in question, and by the way, this is an article on space.com by Mike Wall. What NASA found out was that the spacesuit was simply had a very sweaty person in it and was sort of so spacesuits are basically like little space pods, little spaceships that are built specifically to house like one person. And so they have like all these cooling systems and heating systems and everything and propulsion systems built in. And one of the systems that's very critical to the functioning of the space suit is water running through the spacesuit to keep it cool and temperature regulated. And there have been cases where there have been like leaks and astronauts have almost drowned in space, which is almost kind of ironic, but it has happened. Anytime there's like a moisture level that's like too high or something's going on with the water circulation system, NASA takes it really seriously. So there's been no EVAs for the past, you know, 7 or 8 months. Mm. They just got the green light. And like I said, it just turned out the astronaut was just really sweaty and that's what raised the moisture level.
So astronauts are water cooled.
Yes.
All right. Well, that makes sense. I was thinking, you say the helmet water engine, I was thinking the helmet's filling up with water. That would be bad.
It actually has happened. Astronauts have almost drowned because there's like a leak or something going on with the water system. It gets in their spacesuits and then it starts filling with water. And of course, the suit is airtight. They can't take off their helmet because then they're in the vacuum of space and you can drown.
I would think there's that much water, but I guess it will float around and go bad places.
It will float around, go bad places, fill up. Yep. I mean, I've seen astronauts with a bunch of water on their face. It just piles up and you can't breathe. It doesn't drip down. Yeah, it's no good. And you can't like wipe it off because it's a helmet. You can't.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Yep. Jeff, Dad, I remember seeing it in Spaceballs. Anyway.
Okay.
All right.
I'll take your word on that.
You haven't seen Spaceballs, so well.
I don't remember any scene with water in Spaceballs.
There's a scene where he sneezes in the helmet all over the inside of it, and then he can't see anything. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
A similar problem.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's it for this one. And the next one we'll record on Monday because I'm teaching very early classes.